Very good. Let me click got it here. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, welcome, everybody. I'd like to call the meeting to order. We have quite a few people here tonight and a busy agenda, so I want to try to keep things moving as efficiently as possible. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from our last committee meeting?
I'll move that. I'll second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Okay, with that out of the way, I'd like to welcome Dr. Carol Smith, the Commissioner of Department of Health, Tara McDonald, her Deputy Commissioner, and Commissioner of DSS, Mike Diaposi, who are joining us tonight, as they do every budget season, to chat with us about the department budgets and field any questions that we may have. So with that said, who would like to go first?
Dr. Smith?
Yeah, Dr. Smith. You're on mute.
Good evening. And
there you go.
Chairman Lopez, perhaps if we start with the questions, that's pretty much where I was going to start myself. So
do you have a budget overview?
I can bring it up. In terms of the printed sheet, if you wish, but beyond that, director of fiscal operations cannot be with us tonight. So I am trying to do this on my own. And I will bring up the printed version of the budget if you have questions, but that's Mark, if you want to join in.
Sure.
I was anticipating fielding questions, so. Thanks.
So if you look at our main budget for health, 4010 is public health administration. Really very little has changed in that division, which is the largest division, except for with the new CSEA contract, there was increases. And so there was significant payroll increases due to the union contracts, but that's about the only change. Number of positions was the same. There was a mid-year budget amendment done to accept ELC grant funding for additional public health nurses. That continues on. So that's a change from the adopted budget from last year. The only really big change is shifting away from having just a director of COVID ops, but having a director of public health emergency preparedness. This will allow us to receive some revenue from the state from grants, but also let us be prepared for the next pandemic as well.
Yeah, Pete.
Yeah, just a question about this new proposed position of Director of Mental Health. Is that in this proposed budget or is this going to be in a future budget?
That is in the mental health budget. We can move there. We do have that position as well as a few other positions that we would be adding via this budget. One is a financial analyst. To assist in some of the financial obligations and the reimbursable. Right now, the person who does that work is stationed out of the Department of Health. So that would be one position. Another is an evaluative analyst, two, which is a data position. And I know Tara's here and worked with the budget team on proposing new positions, so she could add any further detail.
And just a quick question before that happens, is any of this connected to ARP funding or is this a straight budget from the county?
In this operating budget, there is no anticipation of using ARP funds.
Okay, thank you.
So just in terms of adding on to what Mark had said, good evening, everyone. I'm Tara McDonald, the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Mental Health. And so one of the additional positions is the evaluative specialist, as Mark had stated. We identified the need for data in making informed decisions with regard to any changes to our behavioral health system. And currently there is some absence of data that's based on not having the manpower to be able to gather it. So one of the positions would have a specialization on not just allowing for us to garner the data, but also to synthesize it in appropriate databases, that sort of thing. They would be responsible for that. There is a proposed court liaison to be able to offer direct support to our county courts and judges in terms of being able to make appropriate decisions for individuals that may have criminal justice interaction, but also have a history of behavioral health issues. So this position would be working directly with our court system to be able to identify some criminal justice intercepts and where we're losing individuals. So that's a proposed position as well. Then the sheriff, I believe, is working on an AVERT program, and it's really to be able to identify different resources for decreasing gun violence in our community. The program is teamed up between a social worker and detectives that are identified through the sheriff's office in working within the community. The social worker that would be a part of that team would be out of the Department of Mental Health budget line. That is another position.
Additional? That's another additional position?
It's an additional position.
So you just spoke of three different positions or four?
Three. It was three, and then the commissioner for the Department of Mental Health would be the four.
So it is four.
Right.
Can I ask a follow-up as well?
Sure.
So the Crisis Stabilization Center, the premise of the ongoing funding of that is going to be reimbursements. Where is that going to take place? In that department, or is that going to go through finance department in the county? How do you see that working?
So ultimately, the Crisis Stabilization Center would be operated by an outside entity, and we would do an RFP to identify that entity that we would support. That entity would be putting in whichever awardee of the RFP would be putting in the claims for the services that would be provided. They would be providing the services, not necessarily the county.
Thank you.
Sure. Yes. No. Do I call on?
My question is, there's a lot of positions. First of all, I support the mental health endeavor in the county, but I also support the taxpayers. And that being said, four positions that I'm thinking, especially the financial positions, can our finance department handle these? I don't understand why we have to create positions over and over again. We seem to have been operating quite nicely without those positions. So what's the argument that we need them, not that we want them? There's a difference.
So
there's fiscal positions in every department, Legislator Bruna, especially in a department the size of the mental health or health departments. I mean, finance has their own. Yes, they do pay some of the bills, etc., but this is somebody who's tracking reimbursable expenses in each department, and it truly is full-time person's job, and we are just resourcing it as it is its own department, which is necessary if that's the way we want it to function.
Kind of to Al's point, though, who was doing this before?
So currently it's – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
No, go ahead, Tara.
Go ahead.
You know, we had merged about 10 years ago in terms of our services, and one of them was the fiscal unit, which covered both the mental health department and the Department of Health. Now that the intention is to fully separate those two departments with a new commissioner of mental health, I will be remaining as commissioner in the Department of Health, but the division of the fiscal unit to support the various monies that pass through the O agencies from the state to the county community-based organizations that are supported with those monies, predominantly OMH monies, those contracts, management of those close to $7 million, how it's being used, the deliverables that are being realized through that money, supporting such agencies throughout the county as Mental Health Association, from the mental health side, OASAS, Step One, et cetera, Gateway for OPWDD services. So there's money that does come from the state that passes through the Department of Mental Health, local governmental units, auspices, and then dispersed to the various county agencies that deliver on those services. And currently, we have a deputy director for administration who manages the overall fiscal unit, overseeing the work of both the Department of Health-related fiscal activities, which is very complicated in the sense that we, through the Department of Health on the state level, get a base grant to the county of $650,000, and we get 36% reimbursement on the time and effort of all of our DOH staff that does work that is reimbursable under Public Health Law Article 6. So managing all of that, including the monies that come in for permits that are given, those permit fees, the fees for reviewing site plans, water and well, et cetera, for new development in the county, whether it's residential or multi-unit developments or beyond that even, such as Williams Lake, et cetera. But all of that work from the environmental standpoint and the patient services standpoint is covered under our one fiscal unit who also oversees DMH. So the intention of the county executive is to separate out those fiscal units so that there'd be a dedicated team to the Department of Mental Health and a dedicated team to the Department of Health.
Is this something that was real? Oh.
If I could add one thing, Chairman, is that this, you know, in the 2021 budget, support staff positions for the Department of Health decreased pretty significantly. If we weren't separating out these departments, we would need to be adding back in, just based off of our year experience, some support staff. Now we're adding them to the Department of Mental Health instead of adding them back into the Department of Health fiscal unit.
Is this something that was realized after the split, or was it something that was anticipated before decided to split the department?
It was, we brought this with our budget. So we realized this as we were developing the budget.
Okay. Al?
So yeah, and again, with all due respect, Dr. Smith, I appreciate your explanation. I mean, basically what you just said to us is all the things that the Department of Health has to do. And I think you said it was around $7 million that this is going to take up. Did I misunderstand that?
No, well, the Department of Mental Health has passed through funds from the state through
right.
our units to community-based providers. That's one side of it. The DOH has a different way of fiscally supporting the work that the Department of Health does. So those funding and revenue streams, et cetera, are different for both of those entities. And that's what I was referring to with that $7 million.
All right. But again, like I said, I'm not against this at face value, but I am thinking about it on a fiscal level. And I just think that when you start duplicating, sir, I agree with, we do need a mental health facility, and I believe it should be a standalone place as well. But at the present time, we're creating positions that we don't even know that we're going to need yet. I mean, a lot of this stuff can be done by the people who already been doing it for the last 88 years.
So with regards to the fiscal pieces of it, right now, the folks that have been doing it to cover the mental health department are doing it both for the Department of Health and mental health. So they would need to have the ability to focus, at least to follow the existing mental health department employees and all of the work to be able to cover that. And that would require having the fiscal analyst that's specific to the Department of Mental Health. Some of the other work, according to what has been told to me, our county executive is really looking for the mental health department to have a more direct access to the experience of individuals in Ulster County as they try and navigate the behavioral health system. That would mean an expansion of what it is that we have the capacity to do now. So it's more than what the 10 staff of the department have if we're going to expand our scope. Which is where the additional staff come in. Right now, we can offer consultation to the courts, but we don't have the ability to provide them priority focus, and that's what that additional person would be able to do. So it's really about digging into some of the work and not necessarily touching it, but being able to grasp and mold it a little bit better. And the additional workforce would help us to do that. And if the workforce is to expand even somewhat with the four positions, the back work needs to at least be able to support that. And that fiscal work, you know, without them, we're not able to put in our claims for the $7 million and all of the good stuff that comes, that flows through us. And that's where the additional request for that support comes from.
Thank you.
Greg, Legislator Walter has her hand up.
Okay.
I'll say that Legislator Bruno and Legislator Lopez have very good points of if you're not doing more work, then you wouldn't necessarily need two people to do the same thing just because it's housed in two different places. So what I'm hoping your explanation is that you're actually going to be doing more as two separate than you did as one, which would then substantiate it. On that note, there are I have three things. One is I just want to I appreciate that the reimbursement for the crisis stabilization will be done with the organization that wins. I will say in Dutchess, that's not how it works, and that seems problematic. So I'm glad to know that we're going to stick with that plan. I have spoken to Deputy Executive Mark Ryder about this, but you know, two elements that I would really hope that we're going to see in this expanded mental health, which would require another fiscal person, is an expansion of care management, care navigation, so that you can connect people to the services. I think that we should have a solid team of people whose very job is to connect them to the right type of care in the county. I would hope that it would connect, that you would also partner with DSS so that, because that same person may have other social determinants happening that, you know, they may need mental health care and housing at the same time. And so, but I think it's very, very important. We are not the deliverers of mental health services anymore. We were in its old version, but we need to make sure that we heighten the capacity for people to get care anywhere in this county. And then along with that, which I also think would really require another financial person, is we have providers across the entire county who do not take insurance and we have individuals who do not have insurance or providers who do not take Medicare or Medicaid. So it would be really, what we do need is that the county comes up with a agreement, a partnership with these other mental health providers across the county so that they can either get support on getting, being able to take reimbursements and be able to be reimbursed if they serve people who are not insured or are underinsured. So I don't know if you've thought about that, but you know, if you have, I'd love to hear about it. But you know, again, someone in Ellenville, there's a therapist in Ellenville, that's who they should go to, and they shouldn't have to go to Kingston to do it. And so making those connections are really important.
Could I just ask a question of Legislator Walter on that one? In terms of this intrigues me in terms of quote unquote ensuring that the provider gets reimbursement. Who would be providing that reimbursement if they weren't accepting Medicaid? Exactly.
Yeah, that's the big question. I've seen it in other places. I have to look into it more. This is more of a question of the possibility that I was speaking to Mark about, of can we have a contract with some of the, with therapists, where if they provide a service to someone in our county who has no insurance or has Medicare and this person doesn't take it, can we pass through money, OMH, pass through money, or somehow support them? So it's more of identifying how we can get this done and not that we can't.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time, once upon a time, when that might have happened. But currently, you're not going to get that kind of reimbursement for that kind of care through the state any longer. So again, it would then fall to county dollar, in my estimation. If anybody knows, Tara, if you know anything different on that, let me know. But I know that over the last decade that I've served in the position, we've seen progressively, you know, rollback of safety net type of funding to counties or what have you from the state agencies. And, you know, if anything, they're moving more toward value-based payments and not safety net payments. So again, we're seeing a further rollback in the sense that they're going to define what services they will help to pay for and what they won't based on the value that is being demonstrated in the service delivery. So it becomes complicated. And I think that, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, it as in the past when we operated mental health clinic services, yes, we were the safety net. Yes, we did deliver services often to people exactly in those categories. And the mounting cost to the county was huge. And that's one of the reasons why the county had decided 10 years ago to withdraw from providing direct services, mental health services, and supporting the, we transferred our licenses for providing those services, both adult and children, to private agencies, namely Aster for children and now Family Services for adults. So, but that 10 years ago was a big issue, and the cost factor there was what it drove the county to basically surrendering the license to provide those services directly and supporting the community-based agencies to do that work.
Chair Lopez, can I just respond?
Sure.
I'm not suggesting that at all. I do realize there's some OMH money that's not particularly targeted to specific things. That might be the source. I know that there are ways that other people in New York City has been rolling out some kind of model that I think we can look at right now, not 10 years ago. So I'm saying that we need to look forward and find some innovative ways to see if we can do this, because it's completely necessary that everybody in our county get access to mental health care. And so the answer is, how can we do it? Not that we can't. And so yes, I'm not suggesting hiring mental health providers in any way, shape or form, but just finding a pathway towards doing it. And I think that the other role of our mental health is assisting these providers in being able to take insurance. It's a very challenging thing for an individual therapist to get onto those systems. And I think we can provide that service of helping them get into those kinds. So we serve the patients. We serve individuals with mental health need, but we can also serve mental health providers in many ways. Thank you.
Legislator Brown.
So Legislator Walter, you brought some great points, and I appreciate that. My question is, when we RFP to these providers to provide specific services to county residents that are falling under the umbrella of the county's fiscal umbrella, aren't these, minimum requirements? They have to be able to take Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance, or else they shouldn't be one of our providers. Pretty simple. Or if there's a pathway that we can provide, like you just said, I thought that was a great idea for these providers to get on board with those. That's a fact of life. And if they want to provide those services and get paid for them, then they should at least be part of the insurance plan. Or we find different providers.
Go ahead. The only thing I want to point out is we don't necessarily RFP these services. They're licensed by OMH and OASAS, and it's flow through money. It's not like we choose which providers are licensed. Typically there is only a few providers licensed for any given type of care, and we're not able to choose that. As far as, you know, whether someone who provides behavioral health services wants to set up in Ulster County and take private pay, that's also not something that we necessarily regulate. If they don't want to take insurance, we can't require them to do so.
So if I can ask a question here, Mark, so correct me if I'm wrong, did you just say that we hire or contract providers who are not licensed to do the work we're asking them for? What did I miss there? That sounds a little disturbing.
That's not at all what I said. I said there's licensed providers. We don't RFP for them. We don't hire. What I'm saying is we don't hire mental health providers necessarily. If somebody is needing behavioral health services, oftentimes they can pay and they would go and they would be licensed. I'm not saying that the provider is not licensed. I'm saying we don't necessarily have anything to do with that.
But by
going back to the providers taking insurance and us requiring them to do so.
Okay, but we're trying to create a separate mental health agency on its own standalone legs. So that should be part of what we're looking at. Is the provider, since we're actually creating our own mental health company, or so to speak, for lack of better terms.
So I'm wondering if I would be able to jump in here just with a few of the comments that were made, and hopefully I'll be able to provide some clarity around things. I think I'm going to start with what's probably the easiest lift with regards to case management. Though the Department of Mental Health, as it stands right now, is very small. There's, you know, about 10 of us here. Three of those 10 staff are doing specifically what it is that you are suggesting, which is to make those connections for individual residents to care management, regardless of what their insurance is. So they could have Medicare, Medicaid, they could have commercial insurance, or they could have no insurance. And we are accepting applications for individuals. Sometimes all we need is just their name and whether they do have insurance. And the insurance is really just to identify which agency would be providing them the actual direct service. So we have case management, adult SPOA that takes care of the adults. We have children's SPOA that takes care of the children. And then we have the residential SPOA that is looking to house folks, which a lot of time the housing in itself will come with case management. So we definitely, that's where a lot of the time for our department is spent right now. And with regards to the insurance pieces, we do get pass-through dollars that allow for us to provide case management under non-Medicaid care management. So it could be commercial, no insurance, it doesn't matter. We will provide that service for them. What we'd love to be able to see is like you say, Legislator Walter, on the clinic side. So when you talk about providing a clinical service, it requires that you have a license of some sort, especially if you're doing a clinic where you're going to be doing multiple hundreds of folks, right? And so you also touch on the fact of what we're having the hardest time being able to chip away at, which is to get on an insurance panel, all of the information that is required of them in terms of the documentation and the claims, all of that is very onerous. And for that, there may be some private or even some public clinics that have made the decision. It's not worth it for them in terms of the reimbursement to be able to go down that route. I would agree with you in that if we were to have a standalone mental health department, given the resources, we are responsible for the system. So if a big part of the gap in system is access to services, that's where we dig in. If it's having a hard time in finding folks and helping them to be able to engage in those insurance panels so that they can open up access, absolutely. That would be a part of our charge. But to go back to the logistics of it, as Mark had said, we are not providing them the opportunity to be able to give the service. The licensing agency is. And so if they're meeting regulations and it's a part of their regulations not to accept XYZ service, then there's not a lot that we can say. However, they are providing a service here in Ulster County. They're a part of our system of care. There's different ways to try and engage them so that they can meet the needs. It's just not as direct. It's not a demand that we can make of them, but we can engage them for the health of our residents. So those were the two pieces.
Sure. Legislator Walton.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate all your yeses. And I was never suggesting that we would license anybody at all. But maybe, you know, you, and this doesn't have to be now, but that you could sort of have internal conversations on other ways that maybe we can make it easier for those licensed providers, you know, whether it's creating a central database to help them do their reimbursement process or something, to take off whatever the pressure is that keeps them from being in the system. So, you know, as you move along, especially because you'll have a whole personal private analyst. And so you have that person who can spend some time helping them out, perhaps.
Absolutely. I mean, another piece of this is, though, in terms of the work that we're already engaged in, is around gaps and system analysis, that sort of thing. It can't be underscored enough how much the staffing and the workforce issues have to do with every decision that is made. If you don't have enough, so, and I'll jump back a little bit. There is an opportunity for every resident that does not have insurance or is underinsured, they could go to IFH, you know, but IFH doesn't have the ability to take them all because they don't have enough staffing. And so they all sort of intersect one another. So it is a matter of an ongoing, it's sort of like a whack-a-mole. As you deal with one issue, then another one pops up. But it requires the focus to be able to deal with them, each mole as it pops up.
Okay.
I just had a quick question, if I may.
Sure.
Tara, this is for you. I wanted to ask you how you are prioritizing the recommendations from the Behavioral Health Task Force and how that plays into this actual budget.
So the prioritization was sort of built into the task force process, and it was questions brought to the task force itself. How do you see this priority? How would you like to see the resources sort of unfold based on the needs? And so a place that a lot of priority is put on first is the workforce issue and all of the advocacy that is going to be required, because if we're not able to put our hands around that, anything that we bring up is going to fail if there's no one there to actually provide the service. So it's about the rates and how it ties into the workforce issue. And then with regards to the actual services, it's about being able to provide the sort of the addressing the needs of folks on an acute and crisis sort of basis. So the Crisis Stabilization Center came up as probably one of the highest priorities. And if we can sort of work with folks to get them to a more stable place, then we would have the ability to give them a warm handoff to another longstanding service. But, you know, once the longstanding services need the reinforcements of having the staff in there and the rates sort of increase and it sort of flows along. But the stabilization is the highest, workforce retention and having that being supported. And then also, not to mention that the advocacy is unrelenting with regards to getting the behavioral health beds back. I mean, that was another really important support that the task force thought that we had to continue to keep the pressure on. But that's the sort of how the priority lays itself out.
Thank you, Tara.
Very good. All right. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Smith and Deputy Commissioner. And we will move to Commissioner Iaposi.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for the invitation to be here. So I just prepared a brief outline to share with all of you some highlights to compare our 2021 budget with our 2022 proposed budget, and then we'll be available to field questions. I do have with me this evening our Director of Fiscal, Peter Carney. So just to kind of start off, from the point of comparison, our adopted 2021 budget was just under 118 million. Our proposed 2022 budget is about $4.1 million less at $113,800,000. So I'm going to discuss how we were able to accomplish that and arrive at these numbers. With regard to staffing, we are seeking to restore 12 positions in 2022 that had been eliminated in 2021. Winding 2020 down, going into 2021 as a result of the incentive, which was offered in connection with the COVID-19 pandemic, we actually had a reduction of 40 in staff. So we arrived at reacting to that during 2021, by closely examining where throughout our department we were experiencing the need to potentially have to restore positions. So as we did those examinations and evaluations, we arrived basically at 12 positions that we're requesting be restored. The circumstances with regard to that impact are that in as much as those 12 positions obviously require salary and benefits, we're fortunate that we capture significant reimbursement. Several of those 12 positions are 100% reimbursed, so the county doesn't incur any cost. And then the remaining positions, we incur a county share of just above $100,000. So although we are requesting the restoration of 12 positions, the impact on county share as a result of the reimbursement we capture from the federal and state government for those particular positions makes it possible for us not to incur significant increases. We're not anticipating going into 2022 any reductions in any of our revenue streams. We expect claiming across the board for our programs and services to remain consistent. Our administrative expenses are up just under $3 million, most of which is attributable to the new contract with CSEA. So that impacted our department significantly, and that's where that increase is really felt. Where we were able to capture some savings are around program expenses, which are down about $7 million from the 2021 adopted to the 2022 executive's proposed budget, and particularly around two major programs. Our preschool and early intervention is down $5.2 million, and our committee for special education is down $1.2 million. These are expenditures that we very closely track and keep close watch on the trends that we're seeing in terms of enrollment and costs that are being incurred. So we feel like we're in a reasonable position to have budgeted appropriate amounts based on the populations that we're servicing. So that's really just a brief summation of where you would see significant differences if you were going to compare 2021 adopted budget to the 2022 county executive's proposed budget. And we're available to answer any questions that you might have.
Anybody have it? Legislator Bruno?
Yeah, I'll be the first one to jump on it, I guess. Okay. First of all, I just want to make something clear. When you say the reimbursable positions and it's pass-through money, that pass-through money still comes out of our taxpayers' pocket, just comes out of a different pocket ultimately. So it's all a matter of trickle down, as you would call it, or trickle up, but it still comes out of our taxpayers. So yeah, it's a little easier on the county because the county doesn't have to raise the extra funds because the funds were there, but I still think that we have to be good stewards for that money as well. Just want to make sure that that's clear.
Yeah, that's really clear, Legislator Bruno, very well understood. We also want to capitalize on opportunities that we have in terms of our staffing needs and be really thoughtful about looking across the board where we do have needs and what costs are being incurred. The county share that has to be contributed to any positions that we sought restoration for do take into consideration that people pay state taxes and federal taxes as well. The actual cost at the end of the day, at the end of the budget to the county, is just something that we are required to provide information about. So in terms of what the cost to the county is to restore staffing positions, that's why I provided you with that information. It wasn't that I'm ignoring the fact that people that reside in Ulster County also have to pay state taxes and federal taxes. And, you know, we try to be absolutely aware of the importance of administering programs, you know, that are 100% funded by the federal government or the state government or a combination of both.
I just had a quick question. Were there any learnings that you had during the COVID pandemic, from the COVID pandemic, that you applied to the way that services are being delivered or the way that you change staffing for this coming year?
You know, I think we learned, Legislator Criswell, that human services still need to be provided by people in person, that the human connection continues to be vital, and that as much as technology has infiltrated most of our everyday lives in connection with every transaction we participate in, our most needy and vulnerable citizens are often without any access to technology or any aptitude to be able to provide it. And particularly vulnerable citizens that are dealing with mental health issues, educational disabilities, substance abuse, other trauma, don't have the luxury to really be able or opportunity to operate the technology. I mean, we have seen tremendous progress made. I think our meeting this evening is a reflection of that. So much of the work that we need to be transacting, we can do in virtual formats, we can do remotely. But during the entire pandemic, as essential service providers, we remained open. We were here to see clients that arrived at our doorstep who were in need of their basic necessities like shelter, food, medical, clothing. We had to help to transport those individuals to locations where those needs could be met. We also continued to conduct our investigations into the field to ensure the safety and well-being of children from state central registry referrals. Our CPS caseworkers, our APS caseworkers, much like other first responders, law enforcement, healthcare professionals, were interacting with the public on a daily basis. So, you know, we have arrived at being able to do things with some greater efficiency and obviously benefit from the implementation of technology, but we still need to realize that a lot of our population, a lot of our clients need to be able to be supported to access our programs and services. And many of them also need the contact that takes place in person, the screenings that we conduct to assess, you know, where they're, you know, facing different problems and what those problems are. So I think we're evolving and I think we've made great strides, but I think that our foundation, you know, still strongly depends on being able to connect with people that rely on our programs and services.
Thank you.
Legislator Watson?
I would have to say I feel like DSS personally is one of our most important entities in the entire county. I did get several complaints this past year related to DSS services not being available, but I don't blame DSS, I blame the budget cuts and the cuts in staff that happened last year. I think that when you're being forced to reduce the number of people who are doing these services, our population is feeling it. And so I'm very hopeful that with these new hires, we'll be able to undo that and that people who need the care are getting it. Last year also, there were some cuts to contract agencies, and Legislator Criswell and I worked hard to get those back in the budget. So I just wanted to check if there were any cuts this year to any of the contract agencies, to Family Services, to Family of Woodstock, to others, any of them that you made this year that we should be aware of?
No, there were absolutely no reductions, Legislator Walter, to any of our contracted services. And just, you know, anecdotally, please do not hesitate to bring to my attention any inquiries or complaints that you receive. You know, I think at the end of the day, we can make a difference by looking into each and every one of those on a case-by-case basis. And if we can identify where there's gaps or where someone hasn't been able to be accommodated or responded to in a timely manner, you know, it makes a dramatic difference. Their training opportunities, their teaching opportunities, their ways for us to continue to make sure that we are accomplishing our mission. You know, and I just always try to make myself readily available and offer that to you and all of your colleagues, you know, many of whom do reach out to me on a regular basis with inquiries. And we, you know, do everything that we can to be responsive to that. So appreciate your observations.
Very good. Does anybody have anything else? Questions, comments? Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. All right. Hey, you're welcome. Sure, stick around.
I think I'm going to stay around okay. In order to answer any questions about the resolutions.
Sure.
So I'll stay tuned.
All right. Very good. Well, we will move on then. We also have David McNamara with us this evening, the founder and executive director of Samadhi. As we're aware of the issues that have been levied against Samadhi over the past couple of weeks, many of which were discussed at public comment the other night, and resolution 496 being referred as a result of some of these concerns that folks brought to the floor. We wanted to provide an opportunity to Mr. McNamara to address some of these concerns and answer questions committee members may have for him prior to moving forward with this resolution. So with that said, Mr. McNamara.
Thank you, Chairman Lopez. Good evening, legislators. I thank you for having me here tonight and inviting me here tonight. I just wanted to start out by saying that I'm really very sorry for any harm that we've caused to any of our neighbors, anybody that is in the vicinity of our center. You know, whether that harm came through fear or you know, people not feeling safe. Of course, this was not ever our intention. I sent out a little explanation of exactly what it is that we do at Samadhi, and the way that we do it. You know, during the pandemic, it was a combination of the pandemic and then the closure of three boarding houses. One of them, Elizabeth Manor, we actually had an office inside of. We had a co-location office there. We that rendered about 130 people to become homeless, mentally ill and people dealing with substance use disorder. And then also, of course, as we know, during the pandemic, we had the closure of our behavioral health services, our inpatient and our outpatient at Kingston Hospital. So all that combined, you know, basically went from serving 60 or 70 people a month to, I think our average is 227 people a month. And, you know, through a private grant, we were able to add more staff, but you know, it's a considerable number of people to take care of, and especially people with severe mental illness who would have been in a psychiatric ER previous to that closure. So all that being said, you know, in effect, we were, you know, we have been the Crisis Stabilization Center that doesn't exist yet for the last year and a half. And but you know, I did listen to the comments and concerns and complaints that were brought to the legislature at the Ways and Means Committee. And we, as of October 15th, we instituted some changes, which I think I sent to everyone in written form as well. So we installed video surveillance cameras. We have locked our front door because we are a drop-in center. So basically it's an open door. People come in if they need services, if they need help, if they need to get out of the cold. You know, the combination of not having any of these services available, and also that we don't have a public homeless shelter, as we know, you know, in Ulster County. So, you know, many people will come to Samadhi because they've been out all night and, they're cold and they haven't slept and they want a bowl of soup and they want to just, you know, take a nap or things like that. So, you know, based on the complaints that we had, what we've been doing since October 15th is we've installed video surveillance cameras, locked the front door, installed a video intercom doorbell, only allowing individuals who are attending groups, meetings, or meeting with their counselors to enter the building. So if someone comes to us and says, I need mental health treatment, I need, addiction treatment right now, we will let them in the building, bring them in, and they will sit with a counselor and we'll get them into treatment. But we don't allow people just to be in the building any longer. We are no longer allowing individuals to use our showers on site. We've hired a part-time security guard to patrol the grounds. We have contacted the Clinton Avenue Church about a number of times about building a gate to deter access to the back of the church. And we've held two community meetings, basically where we sat everyone down who was coming on a regular basis and said, you know, unless you're here for meetings, unless you're here to work with a counselor, with a certified recovery peer advocate, we can't allow you in the building, and we can't allow you to be in front of the building or on the side of the building or anywhere, you know, around the building. There's no loitering, basically. And people understood that, and we're trying to move towards more of a mobile outreach type of service, you know, where we'll send people out to because people still call us. We send people out to where the need is met. So the outcomes of the changes that we made on October 15th, there have been no individuals in front of the Samadhi building, on the side of the building on Liberty Street, or behind the building or church. This has been documented with timestamp photographs. Every 3 hours, 14 hours a day, Monday through Saturday, since 10/15/21. Any individual loitering in front of the 122 Clinton Avenue space is asked to leave the premises by our staff members or our part-time security guard during business hours from 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. There have been no 911 calls since 10/15/21. That's also due to the fact that we are serving probably about 35% of our former client base. Our linkages to residential inpatient addiction treatment have dropped. Our average was 11.2 people per week. In the past year, we put 537 people into treatment. So our average of 11.2 people has dropped to just under 6 people a week. Our transitional use of the HEAL grant traditional housing program has dropped by 70%. And due to our reduced contact with many active drug users, overdose reversals reported off-site have dropped from Samadhi's average of 7.4 per week to just under 3 per week. So I didn't want to take up a lot of time from the committee, but I wanted to address the concerns. And again, as I said, I am deeply sorry for any harm that you know may have been caused by us serving, you know, the situation that we were given, that we had to rise up to serve. As Commissioner Iapoche was saying, you know, we were also open during the entire pandemic, and we were basically one of the only open doors. So, you know, that was quite a bit to, you know, to take on.
Okay. We have questions? Legislator Bruno.
Yeah, I listened to your explanation of some of the changes you made, and I applaud you for making the changes. I do think that Samadhi House definitely serves a great function. However, I'm still a little taken aback by a part-time security officer, you know, during normal business hours. There's nothing on the overnight from maybe unless I'm wrong, but it sounded to me that that's what you'd said. They normal business hours till 9 o'clock. I'm sure a lot of these people that are, I want to use the correct words, that are creating issues for the neighbors don't look at the clock as far as what time they come out. And I'm sure a lot of them do probably spend a lot of their time awake during the night. That being said, the video was a great idea, but it's only as good as somebody sitting on the other side of the monitor watching it and being able to interdict in it when something happens. I think one of the biggest reasons we've probably seen a drop, maybe because there's a lot less people there, as you said, like you just quoted some numbers as it's the reduction that you've had to deal with. I know it's difficult, and I give you a lot of credit to be able to run a place like that. But I also feel for the neighbors and the neighborhood who has to live in that. They have children they have to raise. And some of the accusations, and I'm calling them accusations because I don't know for sure. I haven't seen anything. Were pretty strong. Everything from public defecating to public sex, you know, out in the streets or alongside the buildings and stuff like that. And I tell you, that's a pretty serious charge. And I really have to take a step back and really consider a lot of these things before I can vote yes on. I mean, I think you guys are doing an incredible work, but it has to be done in the right way for it to be a community effort. Yes. I have a real quick question. Do you have doctors and medical staff on staff all the time?
No, we don't. We don't, Legislator Bruno. We're not a treatment center. We're not a rehab. We're a drop-in outreach center. We have very little funding. We're a peer organization. So basically, it's people with lived experience of addiction helping other people with lived experience of addiction and mental health to connect them with services. That's the work that we do.
Okay, I've heard also that you're a safe shoot spot. Is that true?
Nope, that is not true. We actually everyone who comes into Samadhi has to sign a community agreement that basically says that drugs are not allowed on site, that, you know, the sale of drugs, the use of drugs is not allowed at Samadhi. They all sign that. Now, that being said, I don't think that Burger King condones people using drugs in their bathroom either, but it's right. A public restroom. You know, I mean, you know, we've had 3 fatal overdoses in Darmstadt and they drug test people, but things happen, you know, so yes, we do not allow it, but people have done that for sure. You know, we've had 7 overdoses in 3 years, aside from rumors that people have said. Those have all been successfully reversed. So everyone's life was saved because our staff is trained, in Narcan. And
that means you're doing your job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're saving lives at the end of the day. But,
right.
I applaud that. I just want to make sure you're saving lives at the end of the day. But you're doing it in a responsible way to the neighborhood. That's where I land.
As do I. And you know, the question about the overnight security guard, we don't really have funding for something like that. I wish that we did, because we do the best that we can. The grant that we're talking about is for 24-hour coverage of peer service, which we do that with volunteers off site, but I mean, they're not, I can't ask them to be security guards. You know, so I don't really have funding at this point to support, something like that. I also wanted to point out that right around the time that we locked our doors, there were law enforcement had raids. There was a drug house on number 5 Center Street, and there's a drug house on 51 Liberty Street. And both of those drug houses were raided and condemned and shut down. And there's like the windows are boarded up. And that's made a significant difference of, folks that are in the neighborhood as well.
Thank you. I appreciate your info.
Yes, Legislator Uchtel.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, you mentioned this notion of kind of mobile, reaching people on a mobile basis, and the fact that you're kind of an outreach and referral center, that seems to be essentially an effective path forward. I'm wondering if you can speak. I realize you've made some major changes. You're obviously, as a result of the changes, that, you know, quite candidly, after hearing complaints from constituents, you know, I'm one of the people that asked for changes to be made. And I want to thank you publicly for making those changes. But you're reaching fewer people. Do you see long-term other changes that you might need to make about the way that you're going to reach the people that you are seeking to serve? Like, you know, looking farther out than, you know, next month?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, eventually the plan is that we'll move the center from the location that it's at now, just because of the nature of it being in a residential neighborhood is while it's very important because we get to serve people that are in need, it also causes problems. I mean, you know, for the neighbors. So we would move the center to a non-residential area. And then we would really considerably increase the mobile outreach units. At this point, you know, we have through the HEAL grant, we have a program where we can put people into the motels for up to 14 days before they go into treatment. So if someone comes in and says, I want to sit down, I want to do treatment, and we do an intake with them, we then through the HEAL grant, we work through Family Woodstock. We're able to put people in the motels, and then we send our peers out to the motels also to make sure that people are safe. But quite often, many of the homeless people that we work with that are going into treatment, we're picking them up in the morning, bringing them to Somatia, and then bringing them home, you know, in the evening. So there's already quite a bit of mobile outreach that's happening. So I would like to really, make that a bigger part of our services. So we would, you know, we would park our vans in areas where we know there's a lot of high risk for overdose and people in need, people in crisis, and that's a system I'd like to build up over the next couple of years. Yeah.
So do you, if I can ask a follow up question, do you feel comfortable tonight, you know, making a commitment to us that your plan is to move the center out of this neighborhood to as a long-term solution? Is that kind of what you're comfortable saying as the long-term absolutely. Solution that you see?
Absolutely. I can make that commitment.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate your defense of the organization. I wouldn't expect anything different from the founder and executive director. And I also appreciate the numbers that you gave us in touting the successes of your organization as well. My question is, though, aside from just reciting numbers the success of your program, can you provide a third party verification and confirm the accuracy of what you're telling us? There must be some oversight from somebody that would be able to verify, you know, essentially what you're saying, you know, is accurate, and at least give us peace of mind that moving forward, you know, we know that we're getting the whole story.
Right. So Chairman Lopez, the numbers that were included in the printout that I sent to everyone, those numbers are tabulated by the county. So that's from the reporting that is done for county contracts that we've had in the past, and basically the county basically gave that data back to us. So those aren't numbers that I just made up, or, you know.
Do you receive money from other places? Do you get state or federal funds?
We have received some state funding for our anti-gun violence program. We right. have not received state funding for our peer services at this
point. Well, I know that this resolution is, federal funds that are coming through the county, but right. Now is because you receive state funds, is there state oversight on what those funds are used for?
The state funds that we will be receiving are specifically for the anti-gun violence program. They're not for the opioid outreach program that we do currently. So there will be oversight for that program. Absolutely.
Okay. Legislator Pettit?
Thank you. I've had more letters sent out to me, about concerns about the operations. I think one of the first ones was actually from the church. And I see in your response you had asked for a gate to be put up. But I mean, how soon would you consider moving out of that location? You know, there's still the accusations, as Legislator Bruno said, of, you know, over 200 police calls. I was provided with a spreadsheet, so I'm assuming most of them are accurate. And, you know, I've also heard that it was a safe place to shoot up, which is why there were so many overdoses on a daily basis. I think what I'd like to propose, given that there has been some changes made to the operations and that there are counselors on staff, even though the doctor, I think, that was helping out from Family Health Institute is no longer involved. But if we put a clawback clause within this resolution, so if things start to return back to as they were a couple of weeks ago, that no additional funding would be provided if it hasn't already been expended. I'm assuming that since the county provides you with the numbers, that's what you're billing the county for as far as people assisted. So, and maybe we could go a little bit more into that. You bill the county for the people that you're assisting?
No, Legislator Pettit. We have had county contracts. We had one that was, you know, well, I guess we had one that was overall basic peer services, which was covering, you know, basically some of our staff members. We also had a grant to, we also train people to become certified recovery peer advocates and create jobs in Ulster County. So we've trained 83 peer advocates and had 37 people employed, some of them at Somati and some of them at other places. We basically plan to move within the next 2 months to move the location. That is our plan, and it's not, I mean, we are actively pursuing that. Because it's not beneficial to the people that we serve either. I mean, it's not beneficial for either party at this point. That is basically something. I mean, we also talked about, you know, from an oversight standpoint, you know, members of the Department of Mental Health have visited Somati. We please ask for anyone. Some of the legislators here this evening have visited the center. We'd like to ask anyone who would like to come visit to see the center. You know, that would really be great, because I think, you know, there's a lot of stories, and the stories lead to other stories, and it grows into, you know, a very large story. But I'd like for people to actually see what it is that we do. We do have data to support it, as Chairman Lopez was asking about. But then there's also what actually happens there, which is pretty amazing from day to day. I also want to reiterate that on the overdoses, again, rumors, we have 7 overdoses in 3 years that have all been reversed. That's documented. That's what actually happened. Those police calls, the majority of them were us. We called the police. People did not call the police on us. We also call mobile mental health sometimes 7 to 10 times a week. And quite often, if mobile mental health comes and someone is presenting with a suicidal ideation, their recommendation is to call 911, then we call 911. Same thing if there's a homicidal ideation, if there's aggressiveness towards another community member or towards our staff. You know, quite often we work very, very closely with the Kingston Police Department, with the Sheriff's Oracle team, and with the Sheriff's Department. So so quite often if we're encountering, especially when you know, mental health services were shut down at the hospital, things got more heightened in that sense, aggressively. So, you know, when we would have a situation, quite often I would call the Oracle team first, because they could send people in plain clothes and it would be more of a subdued, you know, kind of, and if they couldn't get there in time, we would call KPD. But unfortunately, whenever you call 911, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it could be fortunate depending on the situation, but, you know, they send a fire engine, 2 police cars, an ambulance. So it right. Creates quite a disturbance in the neighborhood.
Let's head where?
Something that listened to your answer to Legislator Petit. Have you guys thought of the idea of partnering up possibly with the Department of Mental Health? And I see that Ms. McDonald is still here. And I know they're stressed out with their funding and their staffing, and I understand that. But it almost seems like there should be some sort of a liaison, especially since the county is funding this. I mean, $113,000, that there should be some kind of interconnection. This is another argument for what Ms. McDonald was saying about a Department of Mental Health separate from the Department of Health and working with these type of organizations. I'm a firm supporter of what you're trying to do, as well as Ryan House and Sorge's. I think you guys are kind of similar situations. It just needs to be done in a correct way, in a right way. And right now, to be honest with you, you're in a bad spot, but you're moving in 2 months. So maybe I'm just going to throw this up there that maybe we could do something with this resolution in 2 months when you get into your new location. I mean, between now and or something, some way facilitate that to help. I'd like to see these funds go towards making that much better. Now, I'm not against it. I'm just throwing ideas up there.
Legislator Bruno, we work very closely with the Department of Mental Health. I check in with Deputy Commissioner McDonald and the rest of the Department of Mental Health. I don't know, Deputy Commissioner, would you say it's like monthly or quarterly?
So it depends on the forum. You have staff, there are Samadhi staff that are regular participants in our weekly SPOA meetings. So there's conversation with regards to residents that we work together on. There's a Department of Mental Health staff that has some oversight with regards to the housing vouchers that David had referenced when there is an individual that may need a time in a hotel while waiting for treatment. We have some responsibility in determining whether someone continues beyond a 3-day period. So we're involved in that as well. And we certainly offer as much technical support to Samadhi as possible. But because a lot of the ways that any funding that the county may be getting to support Samadhi is coming through the Department of Health, and that's because of how the funding itself is rolled out. They tend to be Department of Health initiatives. It puts a layer of separation, which I believe that we're trying to be able to address. But we are very much working with Samadhi at this point.
Excuse me, Chairman. We have a caller. Caller, could you identify yourself?
It's Mark Ryder.
Oh, hi, Mark, again.
There he is. Okay.
May I ask a question, please?
Sure.
I'm sorry, is Mark. Mark, are you asking a question? Is for Tara. So in the future, do you see the relationship with Samadhi going through the newly created mental health department?
So I will say that we would foresee, and Samadhi has been working on this for quite some time in terms of attempting to obtain a license through OASAS to provide treatment. The Department of Mental Health, in our stead as the local governmental unit, has responsibility on the local end for some of those licensed treatment providers. So that would certainly accelerate the work that the department does with Samadhi once they are a licensed entity. In between then, from now until then, we would be providing more of the technical support side and making sure that they're integrated in our overall continuum of care as they are right now by participating in SPOA and integrated Ulster and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump on because it's the way the state actually had appropriated some funding to support substance use disorder and opioid overdoses, et cetera, throughout the state. And that came through the Department of Health funding. And the Department of Health funding is very separate line from the state, from, say, OASAS, which is the certifying body for substance use treatment centers, et cetera, throughout the state. So that line of funding coming from the New York State Department of Health will always be going to the Department of Health. We can't change that. That's how that's appropriated on the state level. But as Tara was saying, if and when Samadhi receives licensure through OASAS, then the funding component becomes, we're directly going through the LGU to Samadhi through OASAS. So, but right now, as long as the funding comes from the State Department of Health, it's a meant and earmarked for the Department of Health. So we can't really change that source.
And I thank you, Dr. Smith. I did want to also just point out that the Somati outpatient clinic that we're applying for licensure for is separate from the Somati outreach center, which currently exists. Those are two separate, those are two separate entities. They, I mean, they obviously will be connected and work together with each other, but the outpatient clinic is its own, it's a OASIS certified outpatient clinic. It's not an outreach center, which is basically something that we need because of the level of overdose and homelessness and untreated mental illness that we have right now in the county.
Chairman, Jeannie Edwards joined us.
Okay.
And we are, energy and environment is supposed to be starting now, so we have to move on.
Okay, Ken, we got to move along here. Are there any other questions? No? Okay, well, hearing none, thank you, Mr. McNamara, for joining us. And yeah, I appreciate your time and your input. And, oh, did Legislator Bruno, did you have something? No. Oh, okay, yeah. All right, gotcha.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. I was thanking. I wanted to say thank you, too, but I was muted.
All right. Very good. Well, then we will move on to resolutions.
Thank you, Chairman Lopez.
You're welcome. All right, let's bring them up here 1 second. All right. We will move right into Resolution 496. This was referred back to committee. This approving the execution of a contract for $112,500 entered into by the county with Somati Center. Can we move for discussion?
I'll move for discussion.
A second.
Second. Discussion. So let me ask you, Mark, is this I know that we had brought this up in chair's committee, whether it was time sensitive, these monies would be available if we held off on it again. Quite frankly, I'm not sure if the Republican caucus is going to move forward with this when and if it does come to the floor. I know it has to pass out of here and still go to Ways and Means. I think a big question is whether it's time sensitive.
So my answer to that would be that, and in the chair's meeting, and I think even last month, I may have given you slightly different information on this. This is not actually a HEALS funding grant. This is a NACHO grant, which is why it's separate federal funding. It is not as easy, for this grant to be changed. Somati was a subrecipient. To this grant, and in order for us to move forward with this funding, every dollar has to be spent on this grant by July. So it is somewhat time sensitive.
Okay. Now, is Somati the only organization that could provide these services, or is it a possibility? I'm just throwing it out there as devil's advocate here that the funds could be used elsewhere.
Somati is the only subrecipient who is able to receive these funds currently as the grant has been administered.
Okay. All right. That's what you said. Yep. Gotcha.
To change. Yeah.
Okay.
So if this were to Chairman Lopez.
Sure. Yep.
If this were to, you said July, it has to be spent by. If they're planning on that's not a lot of time actually, but they're planning on moving to new digs in within 2 months or so, if I understood that correctly. At the same time, moving into new locations could be costly at very little. So the money could get spent very quickly in the next 6 months, very fast. So I'm just curious, this is like Chairman Lopez just says, that if we postpone it for 1 month, that would put them into halfway, by that time they would be into a contract or whatever it is they're going to do to get into the new place, and we would have a better idea where it's going to be. I'm just thinking out here. I mean, since it's not going, we're not going to be up against the wall as much as I thought we were prior to this meeting.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it would be devastating for it to be a month postponement, but it would be, you know, another. I think that they could do work under this contract, provide services without providing them at the center, and continue on 24/7 operations, again, providing some of these not directly at the center impacting the residents. So I would still prefer that it move forward, but if it was the pleasure of the legislature to postpone it for a month, then we would live with that.
Legislator Walton?
Thanks. So I'm just going to reiterate what Mark had just said. You know, the idea of it being 24-hour peer services doesn't have to mean that the center is 24 hours. And so I think we need to separate it from this. We can separate it potentially, if David is willing, from the space, and not make the space itself at this stage 24 hours, but the services they're providing 24 hours, which is peers reaching out to other peers, contacting them. So it would have nothing to do with the location. It wouldn't make the location open 24 hours. It would just mean their services were 24 hours. And if that's okay with David, you know, I think it'd be very important to get that message across, that this is not about keeping the building in its current location open 24 hours. It's about funding them to make peers available any time of the day or night. And I would encourage you to support it under those auspices.
That's a little different.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't have an issue with that. Like, I don't have an issue moving forward with this. I just don't want it to become, you know, redundant. I would like to know that it has the support to move forward instead of it making it back to the floor and ending up back in, referred back to our committee again. So
I will say at this point, I support it. They've made some huge changes. While I'm not real thrilled with what took place in the neighborhood that they're in, because of the people who live there, but they have made some changes. They're working towards that goal. They're working towards the goal of getting out of that neighborhood and they're providing a service. They're saving lives at the end of the day. Maybe not all of the lives, but that's impossible. And it's $112,000 out of a $300+ million budget. At this point, I'm going to be a yes to move it forward. And then at the very least, it'll go to the floor and the entire legislature can then make the decision at that point.
Which letter? Rachel?
You should tell.
Oh, okay.
You should tell.
Just to echo Legislator Bruno's point, I think the changes are significant. I think I've made a point of going over there, whether walking, running, riding my bike or driving. I've been there just about every single day, just going past, and it is very different. But ultimately, hearing the commitment tonight to seek a new location is, you know, essentially clinches it for me, and I want to support them, in doing that and finding a new location, and in between now and then continuing to serve people as best they can. You know, if we didn't support this resolution, it's not going to mean that they don't operate. They're going to keep operating, but it will mean fewer resources. And I don't see how even that would benefit the neighbors, that legitimately have brought some very serious concerns to us. So I'm comfortable moving forward with it tonight, you know, after hearing the commitment to seek another location ultimately.
Okay. Legislator Pett.
Thank you. I don't know how comfortable I am voting with it on it right now. If the changes were presented to me, within the contract, that it would be a 24/7. However, the hours of operation wouldn't be 24/7. I'd like to see that already put into writing. I mean, some of my background is just they wanted to put a transitional rehab in my neighborhood. And the concerns that we had brought up are what the Midtown area is experiencing right now. So, you know, my heart goes out to the neighborhood. Also recognizing, though, this is a much needed program. So it's a real, it's a real quandary for me because we need these services. I feel so uncomfortable knowing that children are being exposed to or whatever they were, what they were exposed to. And it's only been 2 weeks. That's not a long period of time. And I just read that there was a fire over at Chiz, which means there's 14 more people displaced. So that they're going to be looking for an alternative or for some help. If we could have a special meeting just before the legislative session to push this through, I don't know if it can go through Ways and Means, just to make sure that some of this language is actually put into the contract and the resolution before we vote on it, I would feel much more comfortable doing it that way.
Okay. Anybody else?
If I could just jump in, sorry, I'm not on the screen, so.
Sure.
Legislator Walter has stated that it's going back to Ways and Means and would ask you to support. I would say if you choose to move it forward tonight, I could work with Legislator Walter in to make sure that the changes were made prior to Ways and Means, and it would pass or fail on the merits there.
I think that's fair. How about Legislator Petit? Would you be okay with that?
I would much rather see it, see the language already in there before I vote yes. It's going to pass anyway. It would be okay. 4-1. And, at legislative session, I'll sit in on Ways and Means as well, Legislator Walter. At that point, I would commit to, being a positive vote on it on the floor.
Okay.
And just Peter.
Oh.
Yes, I'm going to say move yes on this with the changes that I heard. I've also visited. I sat outside in my car for an hour and just sort of watched what was happening. And very, very different, I think, at this moment. And with the commitment of the move, I think all those factors will make me say yes.
And see, when I drove by, they were in the middle of a car accident and somebody's bumper was lying in the middle of it. So I don't have any positive experience yet. I've only driven through 3 or 4 times, but yeah, it's, yeah.
Okay. Legislator Walter.
Thanks. I'll just say that I'm committed to working with Mark and David on those kinds of things and making sure that even if possible, before Ways and Means, you all get a chance to see those suggested changes so that coming into the meeting, you'll actually know what we're proposing and maybe even have a chance to chime in.
That's good. I'd appreciate that. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Or opposed.
Okay. One opposed? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's move on to resolution 510, amending the budget to accept an allocation from the Office of Victim Services for the Victims of Crime Act.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second it.
Second. Discussion? No discussion? Okay. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution. I'm sorry.
Are you in favor? Okay.
Oh, yeah. All right. Resolution 512, approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 with the Abbott House. Move for discussion.
I think you forgot one.
Oh, did I? What, 511?
Thompson.
Yep. Rutgers. You did. Yeah, see, I'm jumping ahead.
Reuters.
Okay. Well, let's go 512. We could take it out of order, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Move it.
I'll move that.
Second it.
A second.
All right. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. 511. Approving the execution of a contract for 76.
Excuse me, Chair. Laura, are you there? Laura, did you vote in the affirmative?
I'm here. I keep trying to switch screens. I guess when I do, my face disappears. Is that what it's doing?
Are you in support of 512?
I am.
Okay, thank you. All set, Chair.
All right, 511. Approving the execution of a contract for $76,203 entered into by the county with West Publishing Corporation. Move for discussion.
Move it for discussion.
And a second?
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
I did want to ask Chairman Lopez just if perhaps Commissioner Iposi could just give some background on what type of research this Thomson Reuters database facilitates.
Absolutely. Commissioner?
Legislator, you could tell it facilitates investigations around locating individuals who are the subject of what are called, for DSS purposes anyway, Fed referrals, front-end detection referrals that our caseworkers arrive at in connection with transacting and processing applications and recertifications for public assistance programs. And I think that it sets forth in the resolution that the contract is a collaboration with the probation department and also the sheriff's department. I can't speak to exactly what their users rely on the software for, but I'm sure it maybe relates to also confirmation of location information for individuals potentially on outstanding warrants or in connection with meeting the terms and conditions of their probation. So that's essentially the nature of the work that we do in connection with the program.
So just in terms of it's like background check information that, and I can think of a number of reasons, you don't necessarily need to go into them, about why DSS, for the safety of other, you know, folks they work with, would need to know background information about other people. Is that, would you say that that's a fair kind of layman's reaction to what you described?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily background information. It's information that helps us to identify the locations of individuals who are the subject, again, of front-end detection referrals, who provide us with information in their application process that doesn't necessarily appear to be consistent with other databases that we cross-reference. I mean, a background check to the degree that that might be done on what somebody's activities might be, this is more around the transactions that they're involved in, so that when they're disclosing to us the existence of income or resources, where they have resided, what kind of expenditures they're incurring. So it's really for us here at DSS about the eligibility determination we're going to make when they're applying for a public assistance benefit. So okay, that's,
thank you for clarifying. Would, that makes a lot more sense.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. 513, approving the execution of a contract for $1,111,045 with health research. Remove it.
Move for discussion.
Second.
Any discussion?
Dr. Smith?
He's here.
Is he there?
Just so you know, health HRI or health research is the branch of the New York State Department of Health, which passes funding down to local health departments. For the purpose of the Article 6 work that we do in general. You know, I should probably pull that resolution up in front of me to get the exact wording, but I wanted clarification on that. Any monies we get for our work through the state comes through HRI. It's that funding division of the New York State Department of Health.
What's Article 6 that you're referring to?
Article 6 is in public health law, which defines the work of local health departments and the kinds of activities that are required under public health law, under that particular article of public health law. It's called Article 6. And it involves such things as tuberculosis surveillance, sexually transmitted diseases, and other communicable diseases, in addition to a number of that's on the patient side, but rabies, environmental health, et cetera. So all the activities that are listed under the 10 core public health services under that article in public health law, state public health law, goes through New York, HRI.
And that's what this funds all of that.
Yes, it is.
And this one in particular is public health preparedness grant.
Right. Which is an Article 6 reimbursable activity. So it's one of the core functions of the Department of Health.
Thank you.
And I don't have the resolution in front of me. This is funded in part by the county, or is it all pass-through funds from the state and feds? Okay. It's a lot of money to do data. I guess I should have charged more when I did data entry, but
no,
it's $1 million.
It's not data entry, just data entry by a long shot. No.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
That's it. We got through everything. All right, very good. Any new business or old business? No? You sure?
Possibly.
All right.
I'd like to make a motion. We adjourn, Mr. Chairman.
You got a second?
I'll second that.
Very good. All right. Everything went well. It's good seeing everybody.
See y'all soon.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Good luck tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.